Hey guys, Ronnie here. This week's episode is brought to you by NelsieSpencer.com. Everything Nelsie Spencer and losing it is on NelsieSpencer.com. There you can find links to Nelsie's book, movie, and classes. Take Nelsie's writing classes or get one-on-one coaching and sharpen your writing skills. Take classes like screenwriting class and novel writing first draft. If you'd like to support the show, grab a couple things at the Losing It merch store where we have mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, hats like this one, the one I'm wearing, and much more. If you're watching this on YouTube, check out links to NelsieSpencer.com and other things, such as the links to our equipment we use and all our social handles in the description down below. And if you want to contact us, tell us you love us, hate us, want to tell us you're losing a story and possibly have Nelsie read it on the show, email us at losingitcontact@gmail.com.
Losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it, losing it. If you got a story, we don't care if it's happy or gory, so come share your losing it story with us.
Hi everybody, hola, bonjour, how's everybody doing? Ciao, which I think means hello and goodbye. Shalom. I'm just trying to mix it up because I always sound the same.
Bring in more groups.
Yeah. I'm being inclusive.
Very inclusive, yeah.
I'm Nelsie Spencer, and this is Losing It, the podcast where guests come on and tell a losing it story. And I am joined, as always, with the wonderful and talented and mustachioed, which I believe is a real word, Ronnie Whaley. Hey, Ronnie.
Yeah. Hello. It's when a pistachio has a mustache, isn't it?
Right? No, pistachio, yeah. Mustachioed is when a pistachio has a mustache, yeah. I think that's what it says in Webster's, yeah. That's definitely. Right, yeah. How the heck are you?
I'm good. It is so hot now. I listen to these episodes, and I hate to complain about the weather, but it's just... I moved my computer right in front of where the sun hits all day.
Oh.
And I did that. And moving my computer is a big deal.
Like, it's a lot of work. Desk.
Yeah, it's like two monitors, monitor stands, and then it's not a laptop. I built this computer.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work. It takes like 4 hours to do it.
Jesus.
And now it's summer, and I'm just, in a sauna.
It's summer, and he's living in a house without air conditioning. Now, you might think that he's in a third world country, but no, he's in New Hampshire. How do you not have air conditioning? That is just
matter of fact,
crazy.
In the Philippines, where it is a third world country, I would expect AC
everybody,
right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah,
water
that's
and
not
AC.
That's like me being unfair and unkind to third world countries. I mean, come on. Yeah.
I'm doing all right, honey.
I'm
doing all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a quick little story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm walking the dog today.
Yes.
And I'm walking her in this little beach town near where I live. And so all the houses are close together because it's the beach and you don't get a lot of property. And I'm passing by this guy's house and a house with a little piece of lawn, maybe 15 by 10 feet, literally small. And Callie stops and she squats and she pees on it. And I hear, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I look and there's this guy down the sidewalk. He's like, "Did your dog just pee on my lawn?" I'm like, "Oh gosh, I'm so sorry." It's like, "I can't believe you would let your dog do that." I'm sorry, I guess I wasn't paying attention. He's like, "That's unbelievable. I cannot believe how inconsiderate you are."
Oh,
I said, "Really?
Geez.
Like you've never had a dog pee on your lawn before?" "Not that I know of." I was like, "Huh, really? Well, you know, I kind of feel like if you have a lawn, sometimes a dog might pee on it. But I am sorry." Is that incredible?
Wow.
I mean,
what was that guy's problem?
I don't know. It was I guess he'd gone to the corner to do something or I don't know what, but he came around the corner and saw Callie pee on his lawn and went as if I as a human had pooped on his lawn.
Yeah.
That's what it felt.
That's what I mean. And I like, was like, plus a dog peeing on your lawn. What's the big deal? Like, first of all, it's good for your lawn. There's that, right? Also,
oh, is it?
Yeah. I mean, peeing, you know, peeing and pooping on lawns is actually, it's fruitful for the growth of your grass. Huh. Yeah.
I did not. Well, I wish I had that little piece of info that I could have tossed at him.
Yeah.
Actually, I just did you a favor and I'm not charging you for it. Yeah. So fuck off, buddy.
Yeah, right? I mean, right? It's like the circle of life, right? Oh, coffee grounds are also really good. Ashes, also
right,
very good.
Right, you know? Right. So you know what I'm going to do? Next time I walk her, I'm going to bring some coffee grounds and some ashes and put them right on his lawn, right where she
peed. While you're taking a dump, you know?
And and then say, you're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
So that's my little story. Yeah. Yeah. So what else? What's up? Is there anything interesting we should be talking about?
Yeah. So I thought that you would find this pretty interesting. So I don't know who Shirley Temple is. I know it's a drink. You can drink it. Never had it, but so there's this.
Yeah, it's nothing like Wang Wang. I'm just,
no.
I'm just
oh,
saying.
It's not?
No.
Oh, okay.
Shirley Temple. When we were kids, you could get a Shirley Temple or a Roy Rogers. And a Shirley Temple was what you would get as a kid, which was basically 7-Up and a little bit of grenadine cherry juice.
Oh, it's not alcoholic.
It's not alcoholic.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
And the Roy Rogers, I think, was like ginger ale with cherry juice. Because heaven forbid, girls and boys drank the same non-alcoholic drink.
Yeah.
And Shirley Temple was a huge kid star.
Yes.
Like, she probably was in 20 movies.
Yeah.
When she was, like, little. And she could tap dance. She was like, she would say, oh, my goodness. That was, like, her line.
Oh.
She don't, oh, my goodness. And she had curly hair. I had a Shirley Temple wig as a kid.
Really?
And a Shirley Temple doll.
Wow.
And I loved Shirley Temple movies.
Really?
Loved them. Yeah.
Well, Google, I'm going to now read this article. Okay. Google is paying tribute to one of Hollywood's biggest child actors. On Wednesday, Google's search page featured a homage to Shirley Temple Black.
Homage. Omage.
Homage.
You don't pronounce the H. It's homage. Omage.
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 To Shirley Temple Black. Is that her full name?
Yeah, she got married and then I think she became like a politician.
Oh, really?
She actually like was a senator or something. Yeah. Go ahead.
Whose stardom was so immense, she made history by receiving an honorary Academy Award at age 6. Wow. On June 9, 2015, California's Santa Monica History Museum opened an exhibit titled Love Shirley Temple, featuring rare memorabilia. Google says in a post detailed Wednesday's doodle. So they have made a huge... So what happened was is they did this, you know, omage to Shirley Temple and on Google. And a lot of people didn't know who she was. So people are looking her up because they don't know who she is. So why don't you explain to the folks?
They're like, who the fuck's Shirley Temple?
Yeah.
Now, Shirley Temple was probably my mother's age. My mom was born in 1925, right? Mm. Or maybe she's a little bit younger than my mom, because if she got an honorary Oscar when she was 6, she probably got that Oscar maybe in 1945 or something. And she did the movie Heidi. She did, oh God, I wish I knew the names of the movies, but it was always like, a Shirley Temple movie's on
the
Bright
on
Eyes,
the good
yeah.
Ship Lollipop.
Ship Lollipop, wow. Yes. Animal crackers in my soup. Lions and tigers loop the loop. Gosh, oh, gee, how. Okay, I'm going to stop because it's scary when someone my age is pretending to be 6. I should be arrested.
She was born April 23, 1928.
28. Okay, so she was like 3 years younger than my mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Ooh, she was earning $1,000 a week. Which is a lot of money at the time.
That's a lot of money in 1935.
Yeah.
There's a very famous scene of her dancing with Bojangles, who's a famous black tap dancer. And they're doing this tap dance routine up and down these stairs.
Oh, I think I know of this.
YouTube that, guys. Yeah. YouTube that, because that is fantastic. She was just the greatest.
Yeah.
She was fantastic. I watched her. I've seen every Shirley Temple movie. And there was a Shirley Temple doll. And she was still super duper famous when I was a kid. And I was a kid in the 60s, right? Late 50s, early 60s. And she was making movies in the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah.
She made a couple of movies when she was a teenager. Well, that's so funny. I love it that Google's like, Google's like, yeah, let's pay tribute to Shirley Temple Black. And everybody's like, who the fuck?
Yeah, so they
is
went
that?
To Google right? her. Yeah.
Right. Everybody had to Google her. Yeah.
I had to Google her too because I didn't know who she was.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but now she's trending. Yeah.
And now right? You just told everyone who she is. Millennials.
Yeah, you millennials. And let me tell you, whoever that was at Google that decided to do a tribute to Shirley Temple, they're fired. They're like, get out of here. Yeah, next you're going to want to talk about Mark Twain. Get the hell out of here. Let's do Lizzo, for God's sake.
Cardi B. Cardi B needs a page.
Yeah. Come on. Cardi B needs an omage. Omage. Yeah. An homage. Yeah. Okay, so which brings us to Cardi B, what brings us to actually our guest today, who is my brother, and his name is Cardi with a T, not Cardi with a D. And people, when Cardi B first became big, they would say to my brother, Carti, are you a little mad at Cardi B? He's like, who the hell? Like, in Cardi's mind, he's bigger than Cardi B, right? Yeah. In my brother's mind. So he's our guest today, and he has a heck of a story. Am I right, Ronnie?
Yeah.
So buckle up, get a snack, and enjoy. Okay.
So my interview turned him off. Okay.
Fourth time's the charm. So I would love to introduce my amazing, wonderful, handsome, talented, funky, and I mean that in the 1970s R&B sense, brother, Carson Spencer. Hey, Cart.
Hey.
And you were going to say that I forgot something. The first time I was introducing you, I said something, and then I forgot it the second or the third or the fourth time.
Well, you were taking my coaching, which when you said, how should I introduce you? I said, is the most talented, you know, fabulous, wonderful person who's yet to be discovered.
Exactly.
And then you said, I think that was that might have been hyperbole.
Oh.
And my response would have been, if we hadn't had technical problems, well, I was thinking of that being my stage name. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. So Cardi, I will say, along with all of the other things that I mentioned, he's a playwright and he also is, he works one-on-one coaching, sort of a life coach, does something called sound healing. And there you have it. So hi, Cart.
Hi there.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm ready, kind of excited, because I feel like I'm going to share stuff about my journey that I've never shared before. And it's basically because I want you to have a fabulous podcast. So I think I'm kind of taking, I'm losing, I'm losing the outer layer. I'm stripping myself naked.
Mm. Yeah, watch out, because at the drop of a hat, he will strip naked. So I'm just gonna ignore that metaphor, and we're gonna keep going. Well, before you go into your losing it story, which we are gonna go into, I just want to let the listeners know a little bit about you.
Okay.
Cardi is my big brother. Taller and also older. He's ancient. No, he He's not. He's only 20 months older. And you're in, he's in San Francisco. And what are you doing these days, Cart? How have you been through the whole pandemic?
Well, I've actually liked it because everything slowed down. And I could just, you know, take Max for his long walks. I have a Bengal kitty who's sitting right here, loves to go out on his leash. And, you know, be out in nature. And we've taken a couple of trips. And it's been interesting sitting back and watching kind of civilization fall apart to a certain extent. And it's consistent with, you know, kind of what I've been believing as I've, you know, sort of looked at my own 66-year journey through life. That we're in an incredible, what I'm calling an evolutionary leap, where old ideas about ourselves and who we are and how we're supposed to show up and what the world looks like, it's all shifting and changing very quickly. And as crazy as it seems, I really see it as a healing crisis. So it's enabled me to kind of step back and also focus on other things. I found some plays that I wrote years ago that suddenly in rereading them, I'm like, wow, these are really good. Why didn't I focus on these more? So a whole new, aside from my healing work that I do, and let me say that I call myself, rather than a life coach, I call myself, what I do is life path guidance and energy work, you know, bringing the energetic body into balance and then kind of reframing our view of ourselves and how we fit into the world into what I feel is really more truthful about what's really going on. And so...
Yeah, that's great. And I do want to mention, Cart, that I also want to mention that he's also revisiting a memoir that he started working on, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe more, that I've been lucky enough to hear some of, that's phenomenal. He's an amazing writer. When he was working with, you know, I had the round table, which is something that I started, I don't know, long time ago. And originally it was done on like a conference call. This was before Zoom and all that. And Cardi was one of the members. We had like six people that we'd meet once a week. And every week Cardi shared someone, at least one person in the group would use the words brilliant to describe it. And he's a brilliant writer. And I loved the way you talked about what you do, Cart, because that is really true. You guys know, if you listen to this podcast, that I'm often quoting him. And one of the main quotes that I use is something that you'll say to me quite often, if I call you up sobbing, which Cardi and I do call each other sobbing on a regular basis. We also call each other happy, but we do go to each other when we need help and support and we're feeling sad. And he will often say, what if nothing's wrong? Which Ronnie and I have decided should be merch. I mean, we need that t-shirt so badly. We'll of course give Cardi credit. We won't give him any money, but we'll give him credit. What if nothing's wrong? It'll be in quotes. It'll say Karsten Spencer and, you know.
And then put my website, because then maybe
there you go.
KarstenSpencer.com. It's Karsten Spencer, Spencer.com. And if you forget the spelling of the first name, just remember it's 10 cars backwards.
Oh, did you just make that up? Or you've been doing that for years?
Many years ago. And it's part of my abundance, you know, that Karsten is 10 cars, and soon I will. I'm still waiting for that abundance to come in that I could actually, and I don't think I would probably spend it on cars.
What are you going to do with 10 cars? Come on.
Exactly. But who I do love cars.
Who are you, Jay Leno?
Exactly.
Who are you, Jerry
Jay's
Seinfeld?
Already done it. Yeah.
So I also loved what you said, Cart, about, a healing crisis, and also seeing all this that we've been going through, and not just the pandemic, but the change in leadership in the U.S. from Trump to Biden, and the crisis around race, I think a huge shift in awareness around race in this country.
I think it's more than race. It really is about letting go of our judging people of their worth based on all these different paradigms, because it's, you know, race is a big one that we can clearly see, but certainly sexual preference, sex. You know, I work with so many women, and you know, that you guys are given so much stuff that denies your basic worth and ability to show up just as you are.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we men get kind of an opposite thing where there's this extra power that we've got to prove ourselves, and both roles are they block who we really are.
Right.
They don't allow
right.
that to really
right.
blossom.
Because there's because both roles have a series of walls. You know, it's like we're being put in this box. Well, if I'm a woman, if I'm a straight woman, if I'm a straight married woman, if I'm a straight, you know,
white woman
of a certain age, all of these things create boxes. And it's sort of like, you know, am I allowed to wear, if something as stupid as, do I get to still wear tie-dyed pants even though I'm 64? Do I, right? It's like all the different ways in which we limit ourselves. So I love that card. And let's not forget politics and opinions and how we put each other into boxes if we have a certain opinion. You know, are you going to get vaccinated or are you not? Oh, you're an anti-vaxxer. Oh, you won't wear a mask. Oh, you do wear a mask. So many ways in which we judge and categorize people and other people, we otherness them, right? Versus, you know, I didn't make this up, but I do quote it a lot, and I don't know who said it first, but you know, humans are much more the same than we are different, you know, regardless of what color we are, what our preferences sexually, how tall we are, how short we are, where we were born, what our culture is, because we all have the feelings and the desires and the sadness and the, you know, all those things. So,
well,
yeah.
That's what all the great spiritual teachings, that's at the base of them, that we all come from one source energy. And we're just, and that's the gift of our human experience, is that we get to choose, we get to be different. But so much of the programming, particularly for the last 10,000 years, is no, your job is to fit in. Your job is to do it right and, you know, get the approval from everyone else out there. And,
right.
you know, we
right.
learn it very early in our childhood by what's going to make mom and dad happy. What's going to
right,
keep them?
Right, right. What's going to make...
Our feeling center is present before our intellect is. So regardless of what our parents are saying, we're feeling it. And when mom thinks, oh my God, life was much more simple when this kid wasn't here, we... feel that and go, oh, mom doesn't want me to be here. And whatever's going on inside at that moment, we decide this part's not acceptable. I can't let this part in. And that's what causes a lot of the angst and problems as we move into adult life, is life continues to trigger these old parts of ourselves that never went away.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
life itself is inviting us to feel the stuff and then let our authentic stuff blossom. But what happens is we blame the person who's making us feel,
right.
or we blame the situation, saying something's wrong and I have...
Right. We blame the person who's making us feel that way, or the situation, or we believe the feeling and we think I'm wrong, or I'm bad, or I'm flawed, or I'm broken, right?
That's what happens. These uncomfortable feelings trigger a story that something's wrong. That's why that affirmation, what if nothing's wrong, is so powerful. Because it sets us free. It moves us back to the feeling. What if nothing's wrong? It also means this feeling isn't wrong, because the feeling is much more intense when we decide it's something wrong and we need to get rid of it because it's inside of us. And so
right.
we immediately abandon ourselves and jump up into our head with some sort of a plan to fix.
Right.
So when I work with clients, it's not only is nothing wrong, but what's going on? Let's invite in the thing that seems most present. And it's always something in here. Whenever we get triggered, the thing out there really can be seen in many, many different ways.
Yeah.
But feeling itself is powerful. There's this saying in Unity, which is the organization that I was connected with so long and was the spiritual teacher of the Unity Church. One of my favorite sayings of Unity is there is only one presence and one power active in the universe and in my life, God, the good, omnipotent. So that kind of is the big picture, that there's nothing wrong. And so what I began using that powerful teaching when I would get triggered and to say, yeah, I would say, what's going on? It's like, well, there's this really strong feeling. Is it powerful? Yes. Is it present? Yes. Then what if it's God? What if this uncomfortable feeling that's pushing me into fight flight is God and it's inside me? And just, I mean, I get goosebumps.
I got such goosebumps when you said that, Cardi. I mean, what a fucking radical way to look at it.
Yeah.
What if it's God sort of guiding us towards the healing?
Well, and that's what so many of the great teaching, you know, the Tibetan Buddhist sound healing process is about allowing the emotions to self-liberate. You know, they said the way to clear your karma, which is our fight-flight relationship to life, is by allowing the emotions to self-liberate, which simply means being with the emotions without judging, with a sense of openness and curiosity. That allows our karma to clear. Wow. And when the karma clears, you know, they were asked, well, where do we end up? What happens when we step off the karmic wheel? They say, oh, well, then you will find yourself in spontaneous action. Such a simple phrase, right? But yeah. When I first heard it, I was like, oh, that sounds scary. Because if we've got all this unintegrated anger, fear, and grief down here, we're scared to jump into life because life's going to push our buttons. Life's there to help us feel this stuff and clear and get better at feeling so we can really be in the present moment rather than always avoiding the present moment by jumping up into our head whenever something uncomfortable or something happens that doesn't agree with our idea of ourself or our agenda of how life is supposed to be.
Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. I feel like I should have that. Maybe we should have you on Therapy Thursday, Cart, because of, you know, we clearly you and I could talk about this forever, but I want to hear your losing it story. So,
well, and I think this is a perfect intro because as I'm on my journey, really the losing it, what I began to lose, and it didn't happen all at once, it was, you know, little steps, was letting go or losing my idea of myself and life, losing the programming of what it was supposed to be and my agenda of how it was supposed to go, which allowed me to, even before I knew some of these concepts, begin to step into spontaneous action. What's next? What if I'm not the person I think I'm supposed to be, or more accurately, not the person I think that I'm trying to be? Really allow myself to be present in life and ask life, what's next? Which started with me going out to take care of mom.
Yeah, hang on, Cart. Stop for 1 second because I'm going to close my door because I'm hearing noise.
Okay.
Okay. So the journey of this story that you're telling us began when you went out to California to take care of our mom.
Right. I talked to her right after Christmas, when I think you remember, when she suddenly shared with us that over Christmas, when we weren't able to get in touch with her, she was in the hospital for 3 days because she had something, you know, the slow growing cancer that we all knew she had was activating.
Yeah. So I'm just going to give the listener a little context. So our mom, this was, it was 2005, I think, when she was diagnosed with cancer. They said it was inoperable, but our big brother, Dick, found a surgeon at, I think UCLA Medical Center, got her, operated on. They went into her small intestines and took out a lot of cancer. And then I think she lived for much longer than they anticipated. So it's now 2005. I guess it's actually when is it, Card? Is it 2005 or 2006?
She died in 2006. But I went out in 2005.
Yeah, so
I was out there for about 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember that we were in Martha's Vineyard, right? So around Christmas, we get you find out from mom, go ahead, that she'd been in the hospital.
No, but this is way before Martha's Vineyard.
Right,
Martha's Vineyard was the end when I had to go back early, and then a few days later she passed.
No. Martha's Vineyard is when we decided you needed to go. That's when we all decided that you were going to go to California.
No. That was different. There was another. Martha's Vineyard was the one that Mom didn't go to because she was too sick. She was too sick to go, remember?
Yeah, but you hadn't gone out there yet.
Oh, yes, I had. Yes, I had. I'd been out there for almost 9 months. Yeah, absolutely. I'd been out there. Yeah, because I remember sitting at her bedside when she was saying, I don't think I'm going to be able to go to Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, all right. Well, I should stop correcting you because just so you, Cardi almost always gets it right. He's got a much better memory than I. So I'm not sure.
The whole thing you said about her cancer and surgery, I didn't remember any of that either.
Oh, okay, so I'm good.
I think maybe next time we need to get Dick on because right. He's 3 years older than both of us. He often seems to be able to.
Brother number three, the big swing of Dick.
To put the chess pieces in the right.
Yeah. Layers. All right. Okay. So, Mom, it's Christmas. And Mom, we couldn't get in touch with her around Christmas because we found out later she was in the hospital. And now you're on.
So I talked to her. I could hear the fear in her voice when she sort of shared what was going on. And so I said, would you feel better if one of us was out there with you? And long pause, and our mother was never very good at asking for help. I mean, when she had her hysterectomy, she didn't tell anyone about it till after it was all over.
She was just like, oh, the gynecologist was like, oh, you're not using that plumbing anymore. You might as well get used to it. Get rid of it. It's like, what? Yeah, that's Mom. Exactly.
So when the long pause and then she said yes, and immediately, I think even when the question came out of my mouth, I knew I was the one to go. And it was one of those moments that kind of affirms my intuition that, you know, I knew what was coming. It was part of me that just knew what was coming. And so I said, okay, let me talk to Nelsie and Dickie, knowing that, you know, you guys had families, whatever. And I would be the one to go. And I also knew that it was going to be clearing up karma between she and I, and that it would be an entryway into a new life. I didn't know what it looked like, but it really was my, you know, a big thing of me saying, okay, I'm letting go of my life here in New York to move back to, you know, the place where I had my crazy semi-functional. I don't like to call anything dysfunctional, because if I'm still here, it functioned to get me here, but it was a semi-functional childhood, which, you know, is another
podcast. It was an adventure.
And what if nothing went wrong?
All right, I'm going to have to meditate on that one a little bit. Yeah. No, and I actually do think that so much more than I ever could have thought, like even a year ago. What if nothing went wrong?
And one of the things I work with so much with clients is we invite in those resentments and regrets, because they're always places where we've told a story that's kept an uncomfortable emotion stuck. And when we can open to those resentments and regrets, number one, feeling the feelings around them, because a resentment is always you did me wrong. And a regret is I fucked up or I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And so when you can look at it, and anyway, this is for the therapy later. So anyway, I went out to take care of Mom, and it was really me letting, you know, my goal each day or my, you know, desire was to show up as best as I could for Mom and for myself, because I've learned enough by that point, being the yoga teacher who'd worked with a lot of private clients and, you know, taking people on retreats about getting into your balance and trusting your own energy. I knew that to be there for Mom, I had to take care of myself. And taking care of myself an awful lot was doing what I needed to do for Mom in the morning, you know, want to get her to the doctors, you know, make sure stuff was done, and then get myself to the beach. And there was a lot of cannabis, because it was, you could get a prescription out there, and that just helps, you know, sort of calm me. And wine coolers, I discovered, because I know it wasn't good.
All right, so I'm going to just slow you down for a bit. So Cardi and Dickie and I grew up in a place called Palos Verdes Peninsula, and it's in California, south of Los Angeles, south of all those Manhattan Beach, Torrance Beach, Redondo Beach, and it's a very beautiful very beautiful place to grow up. And I would say it's a lovely, lovely place to have a incredibly challenging childhood.
To live through hell.
To live through hell. And what if nothing's wrong? So at the time, mom, and she was living in this apartment for probably the last 10 years of her life. She lived in this apartment that had a view of the Pacific Ocean. Because Rolling Hills, as you can imagine, was very hilly. So Cardi went out there and he got an apartment in the same complex where she had an apartment.
And actually, mine had a view of the ocean. Hers didn't.
No, you couldn't see the Pacific.
There was a little, there was a peekaboo view.
Do you see how he's competitive with mom? Do you see that?
I just like to get the facts straight.
I had a better apartment. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
which once I went out there and I spent like the first couple of months fixing things up because I had a certain budget from my brother who didn't go down and take care of her, but he had the money to kind of help me get set up. And when mom came over to look at the apartment, I didn't find this out till later, but her comment to one of her friends afterwards was, "Well, Cardi's decorated that place to within an inch of its life." Which I have to admit, I had.
He had.
But that's just me, you know. That's right. Who I am.
Yeah. Versus mom, who sat on the same couch that she had since before we were born, and just kept getting it reupholstered. And you know, she wasn't really creating necessarily. Oh, this is my style. No, it's just like with these are the things I have, and I'm sticking with it. All right. So you get your apartment. You went there with your partner of the time, Jorge.
Jorge came.
Okay. So you go out there, you're getting everything ready.
So we spent the 6 month taking care of mom. And truthfully, although it was there was a sense of freedom in it because I knew that I was doing something really important. Being there for my mother, who, you know, basically gave me life. Allowing me as best I could to create a space of comfort and love as she was leaving the planet. And she gave me such a gift because, you know, I saw her facing death with such courage and vulnerability. And, you know, it was such a gift. And the amazing thing was as she moved towards and I found this healer when I went out there, which was a big, you know, it was the sign from the universe saying you're going to be doing healing work as this finishes. Because he worked with his voice and he, after working with her for, I guess, about a month, a couple times a week, her numbers that had been going up for 4 years, regardless of what experimental treatment she had had, no matter what they'd been doing. Her numbers kept going up. In other words, the cancer was advancing. After a month of working with Emmanuel, her numbers dropped in half. And her doctor walked in when we got the results from the test with just this kind of befuddled look on her face. And he said, "Have you been doing anything different?" And she kind of looked at me sheepishly like she was embarrassed. She said, "Well, my son, crazy son, got me in touch with this sound healer." And before she could even finish the sentence, the medical doctor said, "Well, keep it up because your numbers have dropped in half."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was interesting because it was after we got that news from the doctor that she found any excuse not to see Emmanuel. And he was the one that said, "Look, I think your mom's ready to go. I've given her some extra time." His sense it was to help her clear up some of the karma between my brother and me. Which I think probably happened. I think for me, a lot of it was being able to find the person who really made a difference. Not that there's any competition here, but that my brother with the Vedic vibrations and all the stuff that he did really did nothing. But I found this healer that made a huge difference. So that kind of felt good for me in the competition.
Yeah, because Dickie and Cardi are, you know, Dick's the oldest and they're very different. I mean, we're all more alike than we are different, as I said before. But Dick was very, you know, he was in finance, he was an accountant, and then he was a hedge fund manager, and he very much took a very traditional route and was very financially successful. And, you know, he was the oldest, and Cardi was the middle. And so, and I think that when there are two siblings of the same sex, there's, you know, sibling rivalry is just going to come up. And so I think,
well, and I think this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about what's shifting on the planet, the way of, you know, all the different ways we identify ourselves and the world puts us into categories. And the right. second born son, traditionally, especially like look at England and stuff, they're like the shit compared to the firstborn son, you right. know, with inheritance and everything else. So those patterns are still present. So anyone who's listening, I invite you to, you know, just stay open to where you fall in the birth path, and just an awareness of it helps to set you free. It helps to say, okay, well, that's what was programmed in me, but I don't have to buy into that. I don't yeah. have to believe that. And yeah. that can be very powerful.
Yeah.
So anyway, where was I?
You were, Emmanuel came, her numbers went in half, but then she really wasn't going to do interested in it because
she found any excuse, like, right. And so Emmanuel said, she's ready to go. So I, you know, we kind of let go. And, not long after that, she passed. We were actually at that retreat in Martha's Vineyard when we got the call that,
you're right.
She's not doing great. She had to go back to the you know, and I, you know, she was explaining what was going on, and the caregiver that we had there was kind of doing what she could. But after I heard what was going on with mom, I said, put the caregiver on the phone. I said, go to the next door neighbor who was always, you know, on top of things, and get mom to the hospital. That's where she needs to be, and I'm getting the next plane home. So of course, at that point, I was partly pissed off, because this was my vacation too, and I'm the one who's gotta go back or whatever. And I was pissed off at digging or whatever. But anyway, went back, and you know, 3 days later, she died. She yeah. passed. You yeah. came out. Mary came out. We were all there, and she passed. And I found myself after, you know, preparing for the memorial, clearing out the apartment. I mean, all the stuff that I needed to do. It was just yeah. what's next. What's next? What's next? Did all that stuff, took a couple months. And then Jorge and I broke up. We decided to go our separate ways. So I didn't want to go back to New York. He wasn't really happy out there. And, you know, it was one of the hardest decisions of my life, but I knew that it was right. I remember when I woke up the day that I was going to drive him to the airport, I woke up with this splitting headache.
And you guys had been together for how long by then, Cart?
8 years.
8 years, yeah.
8 years. And, you know, we loved each other. I mean, I still do. He's going to come out and visit in the fall. And I'm the, you know, the godfather of his niece. He's coming out with Julia and Veronica.
Oh, nice.
So drove him to the airport. And I remember after I dropped him off, you know, driving home and the tears coming, and the tears helped to clear the headache a little bit, and being back in my stomping ground, you know, my formative years where I was free. There's this song by Third Eye Blind called Motorcycle Drive By, and one of the lines is, I've never felt so alone, and I've never felt so alive. And a friend who I met at the theater that I got connected with after Jorge left and mom passed, shared that song with me. And when he played it for me, same thing, I was like in tears. I'm going, oh my God, this is my life. Cause it was so true. But that first day I went to, after I dropped Jorge off, I went to Port Sakal. You'll remember that, just because it was a place of happiness when we were the kids. My dad used to take us there on Sundays sometimes. It was a nice place with him. There were all these shops that we loved to go to.
Port Sakal is in San Pedro, and it's right in the harbor. It's right on the water. The LA harbor is in San Pedro, and it's a very big harbor. And the Palos Verdes Peninsula is part of what makes that huge harbor. And they had all the shops at Port Sakal. So they have all these shops. And when we were kids, we'd go there. Well, we used to go there and shoplift, to be honest. But I think we also bought things, right?
I the only thing I shoplifted was incense once, but others, I know others got some real treasures there. I'm not going to name any names.
No, we're not going to name any names, but there was some, yeah. Okay. So you went to the Port Sakal.
I went to the Port Sakal and just had this sense of freedom. Jorge and I had broken up. I was unencumbered. mom had died so that, you know, and I have to say when both my parents died, there was this sense of freedom. It's like this energetic release that you're free. You're not accountable to them anymore. Even though I felt like, you know, even from the divorce very early on, I just stopped paying attention to my parents. I didn't believe anything they said. How dare they give me any advice for life when their life was so fucked up. But yet they're, you know, they stay present in your brain. But once they're gone, there was just this sense of freedom. And so the time came when the money, with a little bit of the money that mom had left, was running low, and I still had to be paying my rent and stuff. And I thought, okay, what am I going to do to make a living? And I had made a vow to myself when I left my 9-to-5 job before I went out to take care of mom. I was actually fired. Well, I was let go because I had gone in and asked for a raise. And so they decided to fire me and all the other secretaries and hire people 20 years younger that they could pay a fraction of the amount. So anyway.
Which, by the way, is against the law. Which, by the way, is against the law. It's called ageism, but it's very, very hard to prove and to prosecute.
Well, and of course, I was working for lawyers, so they probably, you know, it would have been. But anyway, I saw it as a gift because it was really not something I wanted to do. And I made that vow when I went out to take care of mom that I will never work a 9-to-5 job again. And I'd made a vow much earlier that I would never take a job where I had to wear a coat and tie. And the nice thing about being a legal assistant, at least where I worked, is I didn't have to do that. But, and so I thought, okay, what am I going to do moving forward? So I thought, and I was actually online looking at possible, you know, legal assistant jobs, because I was really feeling it's got to happen. And there was just this sense, you're really betraying yourself. It's like, oh, but let me just see what's out there. The computer kept freezing. I couldn't do it. I was trying to pull up my old resume and it wouldn't come up. But what did come up was my yoga resume. And so I thought, oh, okay, let me. And I'd been on Craigslist a lot when I moved out there. I forget why I was on Craigslist. Oh, after Jorge and I broke up, there was a ways to make connections on Craigslist. But I was seeing all the different things that were offered. And so I thought, well, let me offer, because there are a lot of massages, let me offer yoga massage. So,
and at the time, Party, yes, were you making up yoga massage, or had you already been doing something called yoga massage?
No, I'd never done yoga massage, but there was a lot of massage there and a lot of erotic and sensual massage. And there were some nude massages too. So I think I was taking my babe. I think there was something else going on that was saying, I'm free. I'm not in a relationship anymore. Mom's gone. There's no one to judge me.
I love being naked.
And so I put in yoga massage, and I had an idea of what it would look like, because when I worked with private clients in the past, always the first thing I did was get them to stand with their, you know, feet directly beneath their hips and kind of get them to align over their natural flow of gravity. And I would always do a little bit of hands-on. And I don't know if it was conscious back then, but I think I was already beginning to start to feel or sense people's energies. And I'm doing this, my hands are buzzing, which they often do. And from the first client, interestingly enough, my hands just began guiding me through this technique that was really just about freeing the energy. And then I would move them to the floor. I'd move back in front. I knew enough about yoga because I, you know, studied a lot about the meridians and how the energy flows. And I was just, you know, following the diagrams that I'd seen in pictures, or following it in my head. But more, I was just feeling where there was tension in the body. I mean, I think one of the gifts of my life is very early, because of some early childhood trauma, which we're not going to go into, I went right out of my body. And so getting back into my body has been a long process, but it's also been conscious. You remember, I used to faint like at the drop of a hat when I was a kid. Oh, this is too much. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Cardi would faint all the time. Yeah.
I mean, not all the time, but a couple times at the doctor's office. Yeah.
When we went skiing
right onto the floor. Yeah.
Just boom. Yeah.
But consciously getting back into my body, which led me to yoga and just, you know, really having an inner focus. What's going on in here? Partly because emotionally I was traumatized, I guess is the word I will use, which, you know, I think a lot of us are. But mom was like this. She used to share that she was always taking her emotional temperature. You don't remember that?
Yeah, I don't.
So I think I got it a lot from her. And I think partly we carry stuff in our DNA that we get from our parents. And it's come up a lot during my life. I think the fact that mom was so premature had a lot to do with how much tension there was, how easily she could get, you know, go from being really a very sweet, loving person to just pushing you away.
Yeah. Our mom was like 2 pounds, 7 ounces or something when she was born. She was extremely premature. They kept her in a shoebox and fed her with an eyedropper. It was before any of this neonatal, prenatal thing. It was a miracle that she lived, really. Yeah. And she grew to be like this fantastic 5'7", beautiful, athletic woman, but she was very premature. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, her mom didn't have the breast milk because she was so early, and she was wet nursed by her mom's best friend.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which best friend?
It was Nana had that friend that we called Aunt something, and she had
Katie McCauley. Aunt Katie McCauley.
Cardi, you go on to the bonus round. Ding 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 ding.
Well, yeah. It just made sense to me because the one time I met her when I was out visiting Andy and Tina,
she offered you her breast.
And I'd say she did. I had probably the only long, satisfying suckling time of my life. 9 years old. No. But she just had this gregarious, you know, she had this personality that would say, you know, her energy was very free and flowing. Yeah. So it just would make sense that,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, this yoga massage began to morph into, partly because I was following the energy and there was this option with nude and erotic. And what was the real revelation after being in an 8-year relationship with someone who was 18 years younger and really, you know, based on the collective consciousness, I was really, especially in the gay world, at least the gay world that I knew about when I first came out, you know, you're over the hill, you're in your 50s, forget it. Well, I'll tell you, I was quite popular with some, you know, from my point of view, just these really very hot guys. And so it's interesting because I would always honor the technique because I did feel it was very powerful what I was doing. But since I was following energy, if the energy went into the sacral center, which is our sexual area, then
AKA the penis.
Well, not just the penis. There's a lot of erotic areas that once you're tuned into that, because I would kind of go into this zone when I was doing it. And I think that's part of what allowed me to let go of the judgment about, oh my God, you're just an online prostitute. So no, I'm letting the Lord lead me. I'm following the energy.
I don't know. I feel like that's the title of a musical. I'm just an online prostitute. You can find me on Craigslist. Erotic massage.
But actually, it was after I'd been, and I had a lot of clients. I was, you know, I
how oh my long God, you had so many clients. You were making so much money.
Well, and I remember when Dickie was saying, oh, have you seen the Love Guru blah, blah, blah? And I said, no, but I've seen the ads and what a bunch of bullshit. I said, I'm living that. That's just a movie. I am the Love Guru.
Have you met my brother, the Love Guru?
But I was, and you know, it was powerful. Like I have a number of clients who I still think about with very fond memories. One of them brought his girlfriend to one of the sessions. So it was.
Did you do like a double massage?
It was a triple. It was a menage a massage.
A menage a massage. You could put that on the menu, right? There's yoga massage, there's erotic massage, and there's menage a massage.
Well, you may have to cut this later, either from your discretion or I may have a panic attack later and say, no, you can't put that on. But my nickname from one of my friends who we used to sometimes do two-handed massage was Karsten Comes on Tits.
I remember that now. I have to tell you.
Yeah.
I was entertained, but I was also horrified. There was a part of me that was like, what? What are you doing? I mean, I had a sense of humor throughout, but there was a part of me that was like, wait, what? Really? And I don't know. Oh, I don't know if horrified is the right word. I don't know. It was so, I mean, my palms are sweating now talking about it. It was so like crazy and sort of over the top and sort of outside of the box. And yet for you on some level, it was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's not even like you're in fucking Palace Verdes. Like, he's in this suburban, like upper middle suburban environment. It's not like he's like in the East Village or even in Manhattan or even downtown LA or Santa Monica or West Hollywood. He's in Palace Verdes, which is like, right?
Well, and that's what amazed me, because the emails, I'd have to respond to them. It had like a whole long paragraph of directions of how to get there. And you park by the second driveway and then you walk past the other guy. But suddenly the doorbell would ring and there they would be. And more times than not, it was like, oh yeah, I'll massage you. Sometimes it wasn't. So it was, you know, more therapeutic, and I did what felt comfortable for me, and I never did anything that I didn't. That one story, I don't know if we'll get to it today, but I do want to share about that. But exactly what you're saying, that's the losing it. Losing that old idea of what's acceptable for me to do and what's okay, as opposed to what's happening and where the energy was flowing. And, you know, and a big part of it was mom was gone. Dad was gone. There's no parent to go to say, will you help me survive? Dickie, you know, given the money that he would, but once mom died and there was a little bit left, it's, you know, and Dick, as much money as he had, he never was, you know, the one who would say, oh, whatever you need, I'm there for you. Take your time to, you know, get balanced again. And truthfully, I'm glad he wasn't.
Yeah.
Because I want to stand on my own 2 feet.
Right.
Or, you know, on my own naked 2 feet doing yoga massage.
I want to lie down on my clients.
Yeah. And it was, I had a ball. I had a ball doing it. I felt like I was really giving some powerful, and a lot of it was because of the early sexual abuse. I had identified myself so much through this sort of confusing idea about sex and love and what it meant to validate me and stuff. And suddenly putting it in this different context where it was really about healing and just following energy, it just was this, it really was a sense of liberation and feeling like I was kind of freeing myself from some old shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Some old stuff.
Yeah. Well, and how long did you do that for, Cart?
I did it, well, really until I moved to San Francisco, and then almost spontaneously, I met Turo and
his partner that he's been with.
Tied up. I wasn't getting those clients anymore. And the sound healing started to blossom, because the clients that I was getting here, I would often share about my journey with mom and in trying to imitate, you know, sort of share what Emmanuel sound healing was like, I would, you know, being the actor, I would take a breath and make the sound. And as I did, my clients would say, wow, I felt that in my body, do it again. Or they'd say, wow, your hands got hot when you did that. So my clients were the ones that said, do the sound healing. I'd say, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. So it was very much intuitive. And then about a year after that, Emmanuel showed up again up here in the area. And we used to go into the forest into the redwoods, because he said that helps you learn to listen. And we would do the toning and stuff. And I would also, I worked with a number of his terminally ill patients, because that's a lot who he would work with. And I remember working with him one night when he showed, he came over for dinner. And then after we ate dinner, he said, you want to get on the call with me? Because I'm working with a client from LA whose daughter has liver cancer, the same thing your mom had. And so we got on the phone with the father, who was there in the room, the hospital room with the daughter, and we began toning. And Emmanuel would just, you know, encourage me to just, you know, trust and do whatever tones came in. And we were doing the tones, and I was kind of feeling it. And you do go into this zone. And then all of a sudden, Emmanuel stopped and started yelling at the poor man. And he said, look, you've got to get it together. You're crying so hard that you're not able to be the conduit for your daughter. Stop crying. We're sending healing energy. Let it go. You're yelling at the father. But as soon as he did that and the toning started again, and I was kind of feeling a little bit apprehensive because he does these big, huge, you know, deep chest voice things. And I was feeling this tightness in my throat. But once he yelled at the father, something released, and I just let go. And then for 45 minutes, we were just, what? I was doing some of my high notes too, and you would hear these kind of vibrating tones when I would hit one and he would hit the other. And by the time we finished, I was feeling this pain in my liver down here, and he was ready to go. Him and his wife and their daughter were leaving, and I'm going, well, Emmanuel, what do I do with this pain? I'm not feeling good. He said, transmute. I taught you how to do it, you know, which he did. And so after he left, I tuned into those practices. I did my own healing, and I ended up going into this space where I don't even know how to describe it, but it was just, I felt like my whole skin was vibrating and that I was part of the room, part of everything around me. And I remember coming into the bedroom here, lying on the bed, and just laughing hysterically with this just joy that was flying through me. And I didn't fall asleep till like, I think, 4 a.m, just in this blissful place.
Wow.
And that really felt like kind of helping, opening me up to really start to trust the energy that was flowing.
It was sort of like, I'm just looking at the time, and I want to make sure that we honor the yoga massage story and sort of come, you know, and I think that you, I feel like it got a little bit rushed, but you came to a sort of organic end in that, right, Cart?
Well, there were a couple of things. One of them was meeting Turo and just feeling, I remember the night that I was lying in bed with him and he'd already come down and helped me move up. I mean, he was, I put that ad on Adam for Adam, which was my gay chat hookup site. That's kind of worldwide. And I posted myself in San Francisco and said, hey, I'm coming to the city. Who wants to show me around? And I got a couple of hits that didn't interest me at all. But then I got this hit from this guy named Turo who said, I'll show you. And I looked at his picture. It looked really cute. He unplugged or opened up his private picture. So I saw him in the shower. I thought, well, you could show me around. Well, to make a long story
show me
short,
around the shower.
To make a long story short, I said yes, came up to visit for a weekend. He showed me around exactly the places that said, yes, I want to live here. 6 weeks later, he came down and helped me move all my stuff up. And 6 weeks later, we're in this apartment living together.
And you guys have been together ever since.
Oh, yeah, 11 years.
That's so great.
And it's, you know, it's better than ever. But that happened, and then the clients that you know wanted the other stuff, they just melted away, and I began having a whole new clientele, an awful lot of women, still some men, but it just didn't feel consistent with what was happening to be taking my clothes off and doing that thing. The other thing that happened before that, it was maybe 6 months before I decided to come up here. I was in New York working with a new client, and we went through the whole thing. And then at the end, you know, it sort of came up and I, you know, asked, you know, do you want a happy ending or whatever? Cause I kind of feel the energy kind of going there, and he didn't. But then at the end of the massage or the end of the session, he said, you know, I just feel like I need to say that the work you do is really powerful. I don't know if you realize how powerful it is. And when you asked me at the end if I wanted the happy ending, it really threw me out of it. So it was just like this real gentle, loving way of saying, you know, to me was, your work's moving into a new place.
Yeah.
Trust that.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
That was right.
And you know, not to, you know, happy endings are easy.
Well, and the truth is, what is a happy ending? You know, it
doesn't right, exactly.
necessarily, you know.
Right, right. For him, it was not. And yeah, yeah. So that's fantastic. So in terms of losing Cart, you talk, just, you know, give me like two or three sentences about what that journey, what you lost. Like, you were talking about letting go of layers and maybe ideas of yourself and ways.
So in a big way, I let go of an idea of who I'm supposed to be. And with that, so much self-judgment. It was really like, if I'm letting go of the idea of who I'm supposed to be or who I'm trying to be, or, you know, and just allowing myself to be present with what is, not just in here, but also kind of where the energy is. Oh, yoga, let me try that. Well, oh, this feels good. Just being with it. And I'm not that those judgmental, just like you said, when I shared with what I was doing, you're like, oh, that part of me was still there. But this other part was really beginning to blossom. And with it, also working with so many other people, also coming from that or opening to that energy of sexuality, where, you know, in this society, there's so much shame and misunderstanding, especially around two men. And I have to say, I had so many, quote, straight married clients, people with girlfriends. I mean, that was, and I think partly because, you know, people, everyone is drawn to certain connections. And I think a lot of people don't get that close intimacy touch that may even include some sexual energy with other men. You know, there's so much fear around that. And to be able to come to a place where it's encapsulated, it's not about making all these bargains that it's so connected with sexuality and male female relationships, you know, and, you know, and
male male and female female.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
mean, yeah.
There was just this liberation. So letting go of self-judgment, but the gift of letting go of self-judgment is you also, here's Toro, hello.
Hi, Toro.
You also, hello.
I also found myself, you know, judging other people so much less because yeah. I was working on such an intimate level that's not intellectual, that's just feeling the energy. And I used to share this with, well, I continue to share it with clients, even as my work has evolved and, you know, we're not doing the nude thing anymore. There's always a moment when I work with people that I fall in love with them.
Hmm.
Because the you know, the resistance, all that other stuff melts away. My intention is always just to create a space of acceptance and non-resistance. And so their defenses are able to float away and you're able to see who's really there. And mm-hmm. you see the, you know, the fact that we are so much the same. We're yeah. not different. We are all coming from the same place. We all want connection and validation to be seen and accepted for who we are, not who we are trying to be or having to prove ourselves.
Yeah. Fantastic. Good, Cart. Wow. Thank you. That is such a great story. I'm really glad you shared that one, Cart. And I do feel like it could have been a two or even a three-parter.
If people want to hear more, let me know, because I've got some stories that they'll definitely be going in my book.
But as I think you know, we end with three questions.
I had forgotten that. Uh-oh.
The first question is, is there something that you hope to lose in the next year?
Fear.
Excellent. And is there something you hope to gain in the next year?
More, I was going to say self-confidence, but I think the word is more self-trust.
Good, good. I love that. That's great. And is there something that you hope you never lose?
It just went to Max, who's sitting right here.
His little baby kitty.
Well, and it's more than Max, because Max is my other Max, is Aretha, is, you know, it's, he just affirms that connection I have with Source, which is also, you know, what I feel during my sessions when I work with people. Never lose that ability to trust that eternal connection.
Fantastic.
Did I answer question correctly? Yeah.
You got it correct. Yes, that was the only, you got each one, you got right, because of course there was a right and a wrong answer, and you got it right.
Good. So I got 100%.
100%. Yeah.
Finally.
Thank you, Cart. That was fantastic. So once again, guys, karstenspencer.com. That's 10 cars backwards, C-A-R-S-T-E-N, Spencer, S-P-E-N-C-E-R.com. If you get in touch with Carti regarding any healing work, one-on-one work, he does something called the Presence Process, which is very cool.
I'm doing my soul singing class, where I postponed the opening date till the 18th. So we got about 10 more days until that starts. And that's really about opening up the chakras and really.
Yeah, that's June 18th. I think this comes out next week. So,
and I also work with crystals and the angels. I'm good at helping people act, you know, connect with those people who have passed on and really feel that support as well. So I do a lot of woo-woo work, but these
days,
a lot
of woo-woo
really,
work.
It's not really woo-woo anymore. And, you know, I'm in San Francisco. This is what we're supposed to do here.
Yeah, they don't allow you. They don't allow you to cross the border into San Francisco if you don't have a couple of crystals in your pocket. So I love you, Cart.
Love you. Thank you for
Thank
this.
Thank you. There we are. So did I tell you that was a hell of a story?
Yeah.
my brother, never boring. Never boring. That's guaranteed. And listen, there's an earlier episode, a pre-Ronnie episode, Losing It episode that Carti is on, that's also, I think, very good and very funny, about him losing his inhibitions. So find that. Go back to the earlier episodes. But I think we have a letter, right? A letter that was inspired by Cheryl last week, where her daughter lost Buddy, the stuffed animal, and it's somebody who lost something sentimental that cannot be replaced. Excuse me. I just burped. Okay. Okay. Dear Nelsie and Ronnie, my cat flushed my wedding ring down the toilet for me. What? For me?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That sounds like, wait. It does make sense. C, my cat liked to sit on the counter in the bathroom while I was using the toilet because I would turn the water in the sink on and trickle to let him drink. Have you seen cats do that? It's very cute.
Faucet.
When cats do that. They drink from the faucet. And sometimes they just play with the water. Yeah. So I have a habit of taking my wedding ring off when I'm home, and I used to keep it on the band of my watch so it wouldn't get lost. I'd usually leave watch and ring on the counter in the bathroom. I'd just gotten up and flushed, was about to wash my hands, and the cat decided to scoop up the watch and toss it into the toilet. Bye-bye, wedding ring. That's so sad. Wedding ring and watch.
Man.
And that's from Daisy L. Daisy. That's so sad.
That's a bummer.
My God. I wonder how the husband took it.
That is a good
question.
I wonder if he knows.
Because did the husband like the cat or not like the cat? Right? Because if the husband didn't like the cat, you definitely want to keep that a secret.
You get a new
right? Well,
very cheap dollar store ring.
Oh, yeah. You get a fake ring. Yeah. But wow. Do you think it was her engagement ring too? Because like a wedding ring, like a wedding band, isn't a big deal. But the engagement ring, that's the one with the diamonds.
Is that how that works?
Yeah. Ronnie. So much to tell you. So much to teach. Shirley Temple.
Honestly, why are there two rings?
Yeah. A guy only gets one. You know how women get engaged, right? Oh, yeah, look at my engagement ring, right? You got the engagement ring. And then when you get married, it's a wedding band. It's just a band.
When you get married, you are already wearing the engagement ring and then another ring. Interesting.
Yep.
I feel like an alien, honestly.
Yeah. Just trying to get all the jewelry we can because indentured servitude is... No, I'm kidding. I don't feel that way at all about marriage. So. Well, Daisy, I thank you for the fan letter. We really appreciate it. I'm so sorry about your wedding ring and your watch. And the cat. I hope the cat's okay.
Yeah. Hope the cat's alive.
Yeah. Well, and you know how the toilet has like a U-ring like that?
Yeah.
That's because if something gets flushed down there, hopefully it's still there and you can go down to the urine and get it.
Is that true? Yeah. Is that really what that's for?
Yeah. I think that's why that's there. Listeners, plumbers, if you're listening, plumbers, let me know if that's
our
not
huge
true.
Plumber audience.
Oh, we have a huge plumber following. Plumbers love us.
For some reason.
I don't know. We don't know why.
We don't know why. We don't have the answer.
So, I think we did it, guys. We're thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe. You can...
Okay, first of all, I'm going to let you...
Right! God damn it! Every time. And the funny thing is, I'm like, I know I'm forgetting something.
I was going to wait.
You're going to just let me hang myself.
It happened like 3 weeks in a row. But
happens every time.
I hated to be the person to do it every time, but I'm the only one here.
You're the only one that can stop me. Okay, so... So cut all that out, Ronnie. Okay, so before we say goodbye, and the funny thing is, I'm like, we get to say goodbye already? That doesn't make... Something's wrong. Something's off. Despite the fact I know that something's off, I can't figure it out. Okay, so since we just heard Cardi talk about so many things.
Yeah.
Peeling the onion, letting go of his idea of himself, letting go of sort of limitations about how he saw himself, and nude yoga massage. I don't know. What are we asking for, Ronnie?
It's hard to put a finger on it. What do we do?
I was going to say, if you had some feeling of liberation as a result of, like, for Cardi, it was breaking up with Jorge and my mom dying, his mom, our mom dying, which suddenly gave him a feeling of liberation. And he was able to, I don't know, explore things that he hadn't explored before.
Yeah.
So, Ronnie's like, yeah. Like, the look on his face is like, yeah, he explored some shit. He definitely explored some shit.
He explored a lot of things.
Yeah. Just the innocent boy from the Philippines just being tossed into the middle of this degradation and debauchery.
When he started yelling, the toning. That woke me up.
Right over my head. I haven't done it. I'm sure that if he did sound healing on me, I'd feel something. But yeah.
Caught my attention.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But people swear by it. He has clients that adore him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I adore him, but he's my brother. But he's good at what he does. So if you've had a liberation as a result of a loss, and you've sort of found something new or discovered something new or explored something new, tell us about that, guys.
It's pretty good.
Tell us about that, right?
Yeah, I like that. Mine was bad.
Yours was bad.
I was going to be like, you have a brother's story that's funny. I was like, no. No. Just stop talking.
That's shocking, perhaps? That's surprising?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surprising.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. You got some options, guys. You can contact us at losingitcontact@gmail.com. Okay. You can also contact us there if you have a losing it story that we might read on the show, or if you want to just tell us how much you love us or that you don't like us, or if you're a plumber and you have some information about that you join on the toilet. You can always DM us on Instagram at Losing It Podcast. You can subscribe. Please rate, review, and subscribe, whether you're listening or watching. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe. Okay, guys? Thanks. I'll send you a quarter if you do. And if you're listening, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen. And you can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on TikTok. We are everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Did I do it, Ronnie? Did I do it?
You did it the most there. That was the most I've ever seen you do it.
the most, the best ever. And hey, check us out. Check out Therapy Thursday, because that is also a lot of fun. That comes out every Thursday, sponsored, hosted by us. And me, Ronnie, and Heidi have a lot of fun. And you know what? You might even get some tips about having a better life.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. I think that's it.
Yeah. You're about to say.
Don't poop in the ocean.
Okay.
I didn't say I think we
did. You were about to.
And then I did. Don't poop in the ocean. Goodbye.
Losing it. You came and you listened to the story. I hope so much that it didn't make you sorry. And I hope so much that you'll come back again.
Losing It, hosted by Nelsy Spencer. Produced by me, Ronnie Whaley. Theme song by Hunter Williams. Follow us online on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and all podcasting platforms at Losing It Podcast. Viewers can email Nelsy with questions or comments about life, writing, comedy, or even your own Losing It story for a chance to be on the Losing It podcast at losingitcontact@gmail.com. For everything Nelsy and everything Losing It, visit us at nelsyspencer.com.